What shall we teach? Domestic science. 3. Homemaking. By the Israelites, industrial training was regarded as a duty. A knowledge of the duties pertaining to housewifery was considered essential for every woman, and skill in these duties was regarded as an honor to women of the highest station. Exercise in household labor is of the greatest advantage to young girls. Physical labor will not prevent the cultivation of the intellect, far from it. The advantages gained by physical labor will balance a person and prevent the mind from being overworked. Physical soundness and a practical knowledge of all the necessary household duties will never be a hindrance to a well-developed intellect. Both are highly important. There should have been experienced teachers to give lessons to young ladies in the cooking department. Young girls should have been taught how to cut, make, and mend garments, and thus become educated for the practical duties of life. There are very many girls who are married and have families who have but little practical knowledge of the duties devolving upon a wife and mother. They can read and play upon an instrument of music, but they cannot cook. They cannot make good bread, which is very essential to the health of the family. They cannot cut and make garments, for they have never learned how. It is this inexcusable ignorance in regard to the most needful duties of life which makes very many unhappy families. Since both men and women have a part in homemaking, boys as well as girls should gain a knowledge of household duties. To make a bed and put a room in order, to wash dishes, to prepare a meal, to wash and repair his own clothing, is a training that need not make any boy less manly. It will make him happier and more useful. And if girls, in turn, could learn to harness and drive a horse, and to use the saw and the hammer, as well as the rake and the hoe, they would be better fitted to meet the emergencies of life. 216-217. In institutions of learning, experienced teachers should be employed to instruct young ladies in the mysteries of the kitchen. A knowledge of domestic duties is beyond price to every woman. 4. Dressmaking. No education can be complete that does not teach right principles in regard to dress. Without such teaching, the work of education is too often retarded and perverted. Love of dress and devotion to fashion are among the teacher's most formidable rivals and most effective hindrances. 246. Lead youth to see that in dress, as in diet, plain living is indispensable to high thinking. Let the girls be taught that the art of dressing well includes the ability to make their own clothing. This is an ambition that every girl should cherish. It will be a means of usefulness and independence that she cannot afford to miss. 248-249. 5. Cooking. In all our schools, there should be those who are fitted to teach cooking. Classes for instruction in this subject should be held. Those who are receiving a training for service suffer a great loss when they do not gain a knowledge of how to prepare food so that it is both wholesome and palatable. The science of cooking is not a small matter. The skillful preparation of food is one of the most essential arts. It should be regarded as among the most valuable of all the arts because it is so closely connected with the life. Both young men and young women should be taught how to cook economically and to dispense with everything in the line of flesh food. Women especially should learn how to cook. What part of the education of a girl is so important as this? Counsels to parents, teachers, and students. 312-313. 6. Science. In the study of the sciences also, we are to obtain a knowledge of the Creator. All true science is but an interpretation of the handwriting of God in the material world. Science brings from her research only fresh evidence of the wisdom and power of God. Rightly understood, both the book of nature and the written word make us acquainted with God, by teaching us something of the wise and beneficent laws through which he works. The student should be led to see God in all the works of creation. Teachers should copy the example of the great teacher, who from the familiar scenes of nature drew illustrations that simplified his teachings and impressed them more deeply upon the minds of his hearers. A knowledge of science of all kinds is power, and it is in the purpose of God that advanced science shall be taught in our schools as a preparation for the work that is to precede the closing scenes of Earth's history. The Bible is not to be tested by men's ideas of science, but science is to be brought to the test of the unerring standard. Yet the study of the sciences is not to be neglected. Books must be used for this purpose, but they should be in harmony with the Bible, for that is the standard. God wants the teachers in our schools to be efficient. If they are advanced in spiritual understanding, they will feel that it is important that they should not be deficient in the knowledge of the sciences. Piety and a religious experience lie at the very foundation of true education. While they need no less of piety, they also need a thorough knowledge of the sciences. 51. In the instruction given in our schools, the natural and the spiritual are to be combined. The laws obeyed by the earth reveal the fact that it is under the masterly power of an infinite God. The same principles run through the spiritual and the natural world. Divorce God from the acquisition of knowledge, and you have a lame, one-sided education, dead to all the saving qualities that give true power to man. The author of nature is the author of the Bible. Creation and Christianity have one God. 7. Geology. Apart from Bible history, geology can prove nothing. Relics found in the earth do give evidence of conditions differing in many respects from the present, but the time when these conditions existed can be learned only from the inspired record. In the history of the flood, inspiration has explained that which geology alone could never fathom. In the days of Noah, men, animals, and trees, many times larger than now exist, were buried, and thus preserved as an evidence to later generations that the antediluvians perished by a flood. God designed that the discovery of these things should establish faith in inspired history. At the flood, the surface of the earth was broken up, marked changes took place, and in the reformation of the earth's crust were preserved many evidences of the life previously existing. The vast forests buried in the earth at the time of the flood, and since changed to coal, form the extensive coal fields and yield the supplies of oil that minister to our comfort and convenience today. These things, as they are brought to light, are so many witnesses mutely testifying to the truth of the Word of God. 129. 8. Manual training. A much larger number of young people need to have the advantages of our schools. They need the manual training course, which will teach them how to live an active, energetic life. Under wise, judicious, God-fearing directors, the students are to be taught different kinds of labor. Every branch of the work is to be conducted in the most thorough, systematic way that long experience and wisdom can enable us to plan and execute. Manual training is deserving of far more attention than it has received. Schools should be established that, in addition to the highest mental and moral culture, shall provide the best possible facilities for physical development and industrial training. Instruction should be given in agriculture, manufactures, covering as many as possible of the most useful trades, also in household economy, healthful cookery, sewing, hygienic dressmaking, the treatment of the sick, and kindred lines. Gardens, workshops, and treatment rooms should be provided, and the work in every line should be under the direction of skilled instructors. 218. various industries should be carried on in our schools. The industrial instruction given should include the keeping of accounts, carpentry, and all that is comprehended in farming. Preparation should be made for the teaching of blacksmithing, painting, shoemaking, and for cooking, baking, washing, mending, typewriting, and printing. Every power at our command is to be brought into this training work, that students may go forth well equipped for the duties of practical life. For the lady students, there are many employments which should be provided, that they may have a comprehensive and practical education. They should be taught dressmaking and gardening. Flowers should be cultivated and strawberries planted. Thus, while being educated in useful labor, they will have healthful outdoor exercise. Bookbinding and a variety of other trades should be taught, which will not only furnish physical exercise, but will impart valuable knowledge. The work should have a definite aim and should be thorough. While every person needs some knowledge of different handicrafts, it is indispensable that he become proficient in at least one. Every youth, on leaving school, should have acquired a knowledge of some trade or occupation by which, if need be, he may earn a livelihood. The objection most often urged against industrial training in the schools is the large outlay involved. But the object to be gained is worthy of its cost. No other work committed to us is so important as the training of the youth, and every outlay demanded for its right accomplishment is means well spent.
Even from the viewpoint of financial results, the outlay required for manual training would prove the truest economy. Multitudes of our boys would thus be kept from the street corner and the groggery. The expenditure for gardens, workshops, and baths would be more than met by the saving on hospitals and reformatories. And the youth themselves, trained to habits of industry and skilled in lines of useful and productive labor, who can estimate their value to society and to the nation? 218-219. In many minds, the question will arise, can industrial work in our schools be made to pay? And if it cannot, should it be carried forward? It would be surprising if industries could be made to pay immediately on being started. Sometimes God permits losses to come to teach us lessons that will keep us from making mistakes that would involve much larger losses. Let those who have had financial losses in their industrial work search carefully to find out the cause and endeavor to manage in such a way that in the future there will be no loss. There will be apparent drawbacks in the work, but this should not discourage us. The account books may show that the school has suffered some financial loss in carrying on industrial work, but if in these lines of work the students have learned lessons that will strengthen their character building, the books of heaven will show a gain far exceeding the financial loss. How many souls this work has helped to save will never be known till the day of judgment. Satan finds mischief for idle hands to do. But when students are kept busy in useful labor, the Lord has opportunity to work for them. If, after carrying on manual training for 1 year, the managers of the school find that there has been a loss, let them seek to discover the reason for this and guard against it in the future. But let not the spirit of censure prevail, for the Spirit of Christ is grieved when words of unkind criticism are spoken to those who have done their best. In the Word of God, there is encouragement as well as caution. God forbid that the hands of those who are trying to carry forward this line of work should be weakened. The benefit of manual training is needed also by professional men. A man may have a brilliant mind. He may be quick to catch ideas. His knowledge and skill may secure for him admission to his chosen calling. Yet he may still be far from possessing a fitness for its duties. An education derived chiefly from books leads to superficial thinking. Practical work encourages close observation and independent thought. Rightly performed, it tends to develop that practical wisdom which we call common sense. It develops ability to plan and execute, strengthens courage and perseverance, and calls for the exercise of tact and skill. 220. There should be open to the youth means whereby many may, while attending school, learn the trade of carpentry. Under the guidance of experienced workmen, carpenters who are apt to teach, patient and kind, the youth should be taught how to build substantially and economically. Cottages and other buildings essential to the various lines of schoolwork are to be erected by the students themselves. These buildings should not be crowded close together or built near the school buildings proper. In the management of the schoolwork, small companies should be formed, who should be taught to carry a full sense of their responsibility. All these things cannot be accomplished at once, but we can begin to work in faith. 9. History. Many who are seeking a preparation for the Lord's work think it essential to accumulate large volumes of historical and theological writings. They suppose that the study of these works will be a great advantage to them in learning how to reach the people. This is an error. As I see shelves piled with these books, some of them rarely looked into, I think, why spend money for that which is not bread? The 6th chapter of John tells us more than can be found in such works. Christ says, "I am the bread of life. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life." There is a study of history that is not to be condemned. Sacred history was one of the studies in the schools of the prophets. In the record of his dealings with the nations were traced the footsteps of Jehovah. So today we are to consider the dealings of God with the nations of the earth. We are to see in history the fulfillment of prophecy, to study the workings of providence in the great reformatory movements, and to understand the progress of events in the marshaling of the nations for the final conflict of the great controversy. As with language, so with every other study, it may be so conducted that it will tend to the strengthening and upbuilding of character. Of no study is this true to a greater degree than of history. Let it be considered from the divine point of view. 238. 10. Voice culture. Students who expect to become workers in the cause of God should be trained to speak in a clear, straightforward manner, else they will be shorn of half their influence for good. The ability to speak plainly and clearly in full, round tones is invaluable in any line of work. This qualification is indispensable in those who desire to become ministers, evangelists, Bible workers, or canvassers. Those who are planning to enter these lines of work should be taught to use the voice in such a way that when they speak to people about the truth, a decided impression for good will be made. The truth must not be marred by being communicated through defective utterance. Voice culture is presented to me as of the greatest importance. Students should receive a training that will prepare them to impart the knowledge they receive. Unless they are taught to read and speak slowly and distinctly, with clearness and force, placing the emphasis where it belongs, how can they teach with any good effect? They should not be allowed to speak so fast that they cannot be clearly understood. Every word, every syllable should be plainly spoken. Students should be taught not to speak from the throat, but to bring the abdominal muscles into action. The throat is only the channel through which the voice is to pass. If public speakers would learn to use the voice properly, there would not be so much throat trouble among them. Those who are to go into the field as teachers and ministers should be trained to speak in a way that will arouse an interest in the precious truths which they present. A man may not have so much knowledge, yet he can accomplish much if he has a voice so well trained that he can impart clearly that which he knows. Church School Manual, page 74, Edition 1906. In all our work, more attention should be given to the culture of the voice. We may have knowledge, but unless we know how to use the voice correctly, our work will be a failure. Unless we can clothe our ideas in appropriate language, of what avail is our education? Knowledge will be of little advantage to us unless we cultivate the talent of speech. But it is a wonderful power when combined with the ability to speak wise, helpful words, and to speak them in a way that will command attention. 11. Music. Music is often perverted to serve purposes of evil, and it thus becomes one of the most alluring agencies of temptation. But, rightly employed, it is a precious gift of God, designed to uplift the thoughts to high and noble themes, to inspire and elevate the soul. The value of song as a means of education should never be lost sight of. As a part of religious service, singing is as much an act of worship as is prayer. 167-168. The chief subjects of study in these schools, schools of the prophets, were the law of God, with the instruction given to Moses, sacred history, sacred music, and poetry. Sanctified intellect brought forth from the treasure house of God things new and old, and the Spirit of God was manifested in prophecy and sacred song. 47. 12. Modern languages. Young men should be qualifying themselves for service by becoming familiar with other languages, that God may use them as mediums through which to communicate His saving truth to those of other nations. It may, in some cases, be necessary that young men learn foreign languages. This they can do with most success by associating with the people, at the same time devoting a portion of each day to studying the language. This should be done, however, only as a necessary step preparatory to educating such as are found in the missionary fields themselves, and who, with proper training, can become workers. It is essential that those be urged into the service who can speak in their mother tongue to the people of different nations. It is not necessary that all know several languages, but it is necessary that all have an experience in the things of God. I do not say that there should be no study of the languages. The languages should be studied. Before long, there will be a positive necessity for many to leave their homes and go to work among people of other tongues. And those who have some knowledge of these languages will be able to communicate with those who do not know the truth. 13. Ancient languages. There are callings in which a knowledge of Greek and Latin is needed. Some must study these languages. But the knowledge of them, essential for practical uses, might be gained without a study of literature that is corrupt and corrupting. A knowledge of Greek and Latin is not needed by many. The study of dead languages should be made secondary to a study of those subjects that teach the right use of all the powers of body and mind. There are times when Greek and Latin scholars are needed. Some must study these languages. This is well. But not all, and not many, should study them. Those who think that a knowledge of Greek and Latin is essential to a higher education cannot see afar off. The study of Latin and Greek is of far less consequence to ourselves, to the world, and to God than the thorough study and use of the whole human machinery. It is a sin to study books to the neglect of the various branches of usefulness in practical life. Never can one who is ignorant of the house we live in have an all-around life. I do not say that it is wrong to study Latin and Greek, but I do say that it is wrong to neglect the subjects that lie at the foundation of education in order to tax the mind with the study of these higher branches. 14. Culture of manners. Students should not be so pressed with studies as to neglect the culture of the manners, and above all, they should let nothing interfere with their seasons of prayer, which bring them in connection with Christ. In no case should they deprive themselves of religious privileges. Human nature is worth working upon. It is to be elevated, refined, sanctified, and fitted with the inward adorning. Through the grace of God in Jesus Christ, which reveals salvation and immortality and life, His heritage are to be educated, not in the minutiae of etiquette, the world's fashions and forms, but in the science of godliness. 15. Missionary nursing. In our schools, missionary nurses should receive lessons from well-qualified physicians and, as a part of their education, should learn how to battle with disease and to show the value of nature's remedies. This work is greatly needed. Cities and towns are steeped in sin and moral corruption, yet there are lots in every Sodom. The poison of sin is at work at the heart of society, and God calls for reformers to stand in defense of the law which He has established to govern the physical system. They should, at the same time, maintain an elevated standard in the training of the mind and the culture of the heart, that the great physician may cooperate with the human helping hand in doing a work of mercy and necessity in the relief of suffering. 16. Sabbath school work. It is also the Lord's design that our schools shall give young people a training which will prepare them to teach in any department of the Sabbath school or to discharge the duties in any of its offices. We should see a different state of affairs if a number of consecrated young persons would devote themselves to the Sabbath school work, taking pains to educate themselves and then to instruct others as to the best methods to be employed in leading souls to Christ. This is a line of work that brings returns. 17. Commercial studies. The education given in our schools is one-sided. Students should be given an education that will fit them for successful business life. The common branches of education should be fully and thoroughly taught. Bookkeeping should be looked upon as of equal importance with grammar. This line of study is one of the most important of use in practical life, but few leave our schools with a knowledge of how to keep books correctly. There is no branch of legitimate business for which the Bible does not afford an essential preparation. Its principles of diligence, honesty, thrift, temperance, and purity are the secret of true success. These principles, as set forth in the book of Proverbs, constitute a treasury of practical wisdom. 135. All our denominational colleges and training schools should make provision to give their students the education essential for evangelists and for Christian businessmen. 18. Preparatory medical subjects. It is not necessary for so many of our youth to study medicine, but for those who should take medical studies, our Union Conference training schools should make ample provision in facilities for preparatory education. Thus, the youth of each Union Conference can be trained nearer home and be spared the special temptations that attend the work in Battle Creek. 19. Physical culture. Physical culture is an essential part of all right methods of education. The young need to be taught how to develop their physical powers, how to preserve these powers in the best condition, and how to make them useful in the practical duties of life. Many think that these things are no part of schoolwork, but this is a mistake. The question of suitable recreation for their pupils is one that teachers often find perplexing. Gymnastic exercises fill a useful place in many schools, but without careful supervision, they are often carried to excess. Exercise in a gymnasium, however well conducted, cannot supply the place of recreation in the open air. And for this, our schools should afford better opportunity. Vigorous exercise the pupils must have. 210.
For every child, the first industrial school should be the home. And so far as possible, facilities for manual training should be connected with every school. To a great degree, such training would supply the place of the gymnasium, with the additional benefit of affording valuable discipline.
217. Those who combine useful labor with study have no need of gymnastic exercises, and work performed in the open air is tenfold more beneficial to health than indoor labor. Nothing short of nature's invigorating air and sunshine will fully meet the demands of the system. The tiller of the soil finds in his labor all the movements that were ever practiced in the gymnasium. His movement room is the open fields. The canopy of heaven is its roof, the solid earth its floor. Here he plows and hoes, sows and reaps. Watch him as in haying time he mows and rakes, pitches and tumbles, lifts and loads, throws off, treads down, and stows away. These various movements call into action the bones, joints, muscles, sinews, and nerves of the body. His vigorous exercise causes full, deep, strong inspirations and exhalations, which expand the lungs and purify the blood, sending the warm current of life bounding through arteries and veins. A farmer who is temperate in all his habits usually enjoys health. His work is pleasant to him. He has a good appetite. He sleeps well and may be happy.
20. English language. A thorough training in the use of the English language is of far more value to a youth than a superficial study of foreign languages to the neglect of his mother tongue. If your students, besides studying God's Word, learn no more than how to use correctly the English language in reading, writing, and speaking, a great work will have been accomplished.
21. Agriculture. Study in agricultural lines should be the A, B, and C of the education given in our schools. This is the very first work that should be entered upon. Our schools should not depend upon imported produce for grain and vegetables and the fruits so essential to health. Students should be given a practical education in agriculture. This will be of inestimable value to many in their future work. The training to be obtained in felling trees and in tilling the soil, as well as in literary lines, is the education that our youth should seek to obtain. Agriculture will open resources for self-support. Other lines of work, adapted to different students, may also be carried on. But the cultivation of the land will bring a special blessing to the workers. We should so train the youth that they will love to engage in the cultivation of the soil. In the study of agriculture, let pupils be given not only the theory, but practice. While they learn what science can teach in regard to the nature and preparation of the soil, the value of different crops, and the best methods of production, let them put their knowledge to use. Let teachers share the work with the students and show what results can be achieved through skillful, intelligent effort.
219.
The usefulness learned on the school farm is the very education that is most essential for those who go out as missionaries to many foreign fields. If this training is given with the glory of God in view, great results will be seen. No work will be more effectual than that done by those who, having obtained an education in practical life, go forth to mission fields with the message of truth, prepared to instruct as they have been instructed. The knowledge they have obtained in the tilling of the soil and other lines of manual work, and which they carry with them to their fields of labor, will make them a blessing even in heathen lands.
22.
Literature. As an educating power, the Bible is of more value than the writings of all the philosophers of all ages. In its wide range of style and subjects, there is something to interest and instruct every mind, to ennoble every interest. There is poetry which has called forth the wonder and admiration of the world. In glowing beauty, in sublime and solemn majesty, in touching pathos, it is unequaled by the most brilliant productions of human genius. There is sound logic and impassioned eloquence. There are portrayed the noble deeds of noble men, examples of private virtue and public honor, lessons of piety and purity. The great teacher who came down from heaven has not directed teachers to study any of the reputedly great authors. Teachers must understand what lessons to impart, or they cannot prepare students to be transferred to the higher grade. In the place of bringing into our schools books containing the suppositions of the world's great authors, they will say, "Tempt me not to disregard the greatest author and the greatest teacher, through whom I have everlasting life. He never mistakes. He is the great fountainhead whence all wisdom flows. Then let every teacher sow the seed of truth in the minds of students. Christ is the standard teacher."
Man's words, if of any value, echo the words of God. In the education of youth, they should never take the place of the divine word.